afternoon. Today is Wednesday, March 26th, 87th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Supervisor not running for re-election because he doesn't have to, Mark Lovelace.
Yeah, quite happy about that.
Yeah, I would figure that there's a relief associated with being on the odd cycle.
I get to sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and not have to put up with me. And Well, actually, you know, it would give you relief from me.
There you go.
You know, you might want
to
consider.
That would be one benefit, yeah. That would be a benefit. So.
Well, and we'll see if we can get Phil back. Had him for the first time in about a year and a half. I hope I didn't blow him out of the water. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about a couple of different things, ordinances and commissions. What are the scopes? What are the needs? Do they get revisited? Do they not? We've got a couple of shining examples based a little bit on yesterday, but overall, big broad picture stuff, and we'll do that when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Hermann Hesse. Sometime between 1877 and 1962 said, quote, "When dealing with the insane, the best method is to pretend to be sane." Yeah, boy, that's a long stretch. I wonder what my believability factor would be on that. Nil?
I think the important piece in that is the pretending to be
sane. Pretend. Oh, okay. So, yeah. I got excited about
it. It assumes everyone's insane.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those that seem sane are just pretending. So
let's talk a little bit, Mark, about what is the role of a commission? There are an awful lot of them. I've served on a couple of them. I'm sure you've served on commissions in the past also that are the standing ones rather than specific to a project or that disappear because of being sunsetted. What is it? Are they all advisory? Are there some that are more than advisory? What is the basic definition of a commission?
Well, within the county, we have a long list of commissions. The Planning Commission, of course, the Human Rights Commission, the Commission on the Status of Women, a lot of different
juvenile
ones.
Justice, juvenile Parks justice, Parks and Rec, blah, blah, yes. blah, blah, yeah.
And they provide recommendations to the Board of Supervisors.
Non-binding recommendations.
Okay. To basically say, you know, we want folks that have a particular interest in an area and can put more time into studying a situation or an area of policy or whatever to help guide us and provide information to us on it. But we still, ultimately, the decision-making is reserved for the Board of Supervisors in that case. And so even with an entity like the Planning Commission, when they make their recommendations to us, we're welcome to accept those recommendations or say, thank you very much, but we're going to do something different or whatever.
Now, does the same concept apply at the state level? For the state commissions, whether it's the water, the garbage, or the coastal commission, or air quality, all those various things, are they structured similarly, or can there be different varieties of what a commission is?
Well, yes and no. There's commissions that have, you know, their own area of authority, and they can make actual, you know, binding decisions, and can, each one will have its role that's clearly laid out for them in what they can do. Obviously, the Coastal Commission is a great example. No one would accuse the Coastal Commission of not having authority on things. But the check on that is that the legislature and ultimately the people of the state of California have ultimate authority over those commissions. And so even yeah, within the variations of how things are set up, Coastal Commission, of course, enacted by a vote of the people. And so the ability of the legislature, they can't just make it go away, though some obviously would like to. But they still have budgetary control over the commission and can do certain things to affect its operation in that way.
So what is the role of staff then at both levels, whether it's at a decision-making commission level or an advisory, pure advisory commission level? Where does staff come in? Because I think the fear that a lot of folks have is at either end of the spectrum. The commission is there, they think they walk on water, they don't give a rip about staff, blah, blah, blah. Or, hey, staff is there for our beck and call. And we can ask them for every single little blah, 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 blah. And, you know, so you have those extremes. Are either of them accurate?
Either of them can be accurate given the situation. You know, looking at the county, you know, we have both internal commissions like I was talking about, but then there's also commissions like the REDEC, the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, of which we are a part, and REDEC has its own actual authority and ability to actually make loans and things of that sort. Then, you know, the First Five Commission that I sit on, which operates somewhat under the auspices of the county, but again was set up by an act of the people, Proposition 10. And it has its own funding source and its own ability to make allocations and stuff. There's a range of how these things can operate. But that balance that you're talking about between a commission or a board or a city council or whatever, between the decision makers themselves, whether they're elected or appointed, and staff, is always a balancing act, and it's something that can vary and can go back and forth between the two. Sometimes a really good running commission or joint powers authority or whatever can have the problem of, if you have too much faith in your staff and they're dynamite and they're doing stuff, a board or commission can go on autopilot.
Yeah, you kind of relax.
And then not see when they need to intervene and say, whoops, things are going off the rails, we need to apply a little more control or oversight.
And the flip side of that, obviously, is getting these wannabe experts kneecapping everything the staff does because they
micromanaging.
So like you said, fine-tuning that balance. KINS, News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good...
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the concept between the relationship of commissions, committees, and staff. I have had and have had buddies on both sides in all different areas. And a lot of times it seems that staff sees the commission committee as a thorn. And it's just a question of how deep is the thorn going to be driven. Because they are supposed to be advisory, not micromanage. Some get it, most get it, some don't. And now you start to get into the, okay, who's in charge here, who isn't in charge here, who draws the line, who spanks down those who are crossing the line, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you find that most committees and commission members who are in the appointed positions understand boundaries?
It's, again, it varies. You know, there's so many different you know, boards. I mean, I serve on like 20-something different boards and commissions here in Humboldt, and plus one at the state. And it really does vary quite a bit. But essentially, your elected or appointed decision makers are supposed to be, you know, a final vote on a lot of, you know, just routine things. You know, most of the stuff that's before the Board of Supervisors on any given Tuesday is things where, you know, it's required that we approve this contract or whatever.
The consent calendar
Calendar things. Where
it always sounds so much better than rubber stamping,
it's just,
doesn't it?
Well, it's perfunctory. You know, basically your choice, anytime you've got a contract, basically your choice is approve it or don't. But most of them are state or federal contracts, and we have their standard form contracts. There is zero ability to make any changes to it. You know, we can't go in there and say, oh, we don't like this, we don't like that. It's like, okay, so does that mean yes or no? That's really all it comes down to. But so besides those things, the balance of the role is the choosing the direction, the policy level direction is the job of the decision makers of the, you know, elected or appointed. And the technical aspects of getting it done is for staff. And so if the problem is when you get the policymakers getting down into the technical level and trying to micromanage how staff goes about getting the work done, and that can end up taking more time and being more complicated
on so many levels.
Yes.
The bumping up or the final decision making authority, you guys as SUPs also have electeds. And you've got appointeds in some of these various. Mm-hmm. Is that another layer in the onion to have to take into consideration when the recommendation comes through? Or are you able to separate it and say, here's what they're saying, here's what our decision is, yes or no, whether it's from this group or from that group?
Well, when we've appointed, you know, folks to different boards and commissions to advise us on something, you know, we're going to obviously give a lot of deference. We are careful and selective about, you know, people that we think are, you know, we've got appointments that are by individual supervisors or voted on by the board as a whole, or that have to meet certain qualifications. And so we want folks whose opinions, you know, we value, but that doesn't mean that we, you know, aren't going to still, you know, look at that, you know, that we're just going to accept it blindly, whatever comes back to us from them.
I was thinking like water district boards, mm-hmm. Community service district, the Bay has got their school boards, things like that that are independently elected.
Yes.
But they still may be coming to you guys either for funding or because they gotta or whatever it might happen to be. Do their thoughts and recommendations get different treatment than those that are on appointed boards?
Yes, those are a separately elected board. They're a separate jurisdiction. We have no authority over them. So if they're coming to us on something, usually it's because there's a collaborative role where, you know, like when the water district, the municipal water district, was going through their water planning, trying to figure out, we've got all this excess water, which is an anomaly in the state. What do we do with it? And there was a lot of, you know, they really wanted to have input from as many jurisdictions, as many different interests as possible, and did a lot of outreach. And so there's a collaborative role there. Or if there's something like with the Harbor District and the work they're doing to clean up the old pulp mill now, they, you know, have been seeking funding to help get some of that work done. They came to the county as an applicant in that case. And
well, and that puts it into a different arena also.
Yeah. But, you know, they are, you know, anytime you've got electeds, they are their own separate authority. And within the county, you know, we see that a lot with elected department heads, such as the sheriff and the treasurer tax collector and the auditor and the assessor, where
all running unopposed, I might add. Everybody yes. Mentioned, yeah.
to where they are, we may have budgetary authority over the department, but or, you know, some staffing control, but policy is reserved for them.
That's what I was thinking as you were mentioning those through the DA's office or underneath, you got juvenile justice, mm-hmm. which is an appointed commission, but it's also under the auspices of the district attorney as an elected. Kind of, sort of, because mm-hmm. it's also direct to the county.
Well, more under probation.
Well, yeah, okay. So. Yeah, with so you've got this montage that's mm-hmm. there. Just kind of curious to see how do the non-experts get treated by the experts and then treated by the authority.
Well, you know, that's an interesting issue there that I'm always, you know, weighing myself, in that, you know, the Board of Supervisors, just like with the city council or, you know, whatever, or the legislature, you know, we're elected, and the only qualification that we have is to live in our district, whereas we have staff that are all professionals at what they do, and that makes for an interesting relationship.
It's 3:30.
Introducing Tapas and Tinis in the Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino. Spring is here, so on your way home from the beach, come check out the sunset. Restaurant doors will be opening an hour earlier, offering a small plate, tapas, menu available at a discounted price from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Signature martinis will be reduced to $7, and happy hour also applies with dollar-off drafts and wells. Also, make sure to check out the new spring menu for an amazing dinner, available starting at 5 p.m. daily. The Sunset Restaurant at Sherry Heights Casino, just off the 101 in Trinidad.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Mark, we've talked a little bit about the show so far, about commissions, committees, how they interact with electeds, mm-hmm. or how electeds interact with their commissions and committees that are there. There's this other thing that's out there, and you guys got to play with it a little bit yesterday, called ordinances. Now, most commissions don't have ordinance writing abilities, or anything to do with other than thumbs up or thumbs down in commenting about ordinances. And yet sometimes they're also used for you guys to be able to be those folks from the community to spend a little bit more time than what staff would normally be able to do. Or you're looking for an independent thought that would be unrelated from staff, and I would imagine to mush the two together. Technical term, mush.
Mm-hmm. Mush, yes. Yeah. Defined in law.
Yeah. So. How do ordinances combine or serve as a support for commissions, committees, as well as for the electeds? What, mm-hmm. How do those things all interface?
Well, county commissions are set up by ordinance. And, you know, the ordinance defines the membership and the terms and their authority and issues that they're expected to comment and weigh in on. And so there's that piece. But then they can also make recommendations about, you know, we think there's a need for something, a need for some local ordinance to address an issue. And, and in that case, that would be, again, a recommendation, just like they can make recommendations.
But they don't write the ordinance.
No. Ordinances are, you know, very technical and generally would be written by county council to make sure that they comply with state and federal law and other.
Reduce, you know, risk. Yeah.
But in terms of making recommendations to us about where something is needed, where, you know, where we need that kind of definition. And one of my favorite quotes on that issue is something that Jerry Brown said, I believe.
Was this Jerry 1 or Jerry 2?
Jerry 2.
Okay.
I believe on his, his first year after, 800 and something bills had been forwarded to him for his consideration, and he cautioned the legislature about, you know, his approach to the veto pen, which was that not every issue, not every valid issue deserves its own law. And, you know, just because something's, you know, there's a valid issue there, doesn't mean that we have to create a new law to deal with it. Now, he said that right before approving the vast majority of the bills that were submitted to him. But I think that becomes an issue for us to consider at the local level of, you know, something can become an issue, But for one, does that mean that it rises to the level where we do need to capture that for all time in an ordinance? And for two, it also raises the issue of, should we develop an ordinance as a reaction to something, or should we say, let's push that off the table and think about this, forget, pretend this isn't happening right now, and because, you know, if we draft a law or an ordinance, you know, we're going to be looking at that for all time, in theory.
And so what is the difference between a law and an ordinance?
Well, ordinance is at the local level, you know, what we have. It becomes law at the local level.
So they're interchangeable, as far as enforcement.
You know that piece where I was saying about county council advising on these things? Have them come in and they can give you the technical.
At this point, okay.
But, you know, one problem, concern I have when we look at developing an ordinance as a reaction to an immediate situation is when you hear these stories about, you know, there's a city in Florida that has a law against walking an alligator on a leash more than 6 feet on a Tuesday after dark, you know, or, you know, that it's illegal for a man with a mustache to kiss a woman, or, you know, these bizarre things, or illegal for a man to, you know, use a microphone while driving a car, you know, and you know that this kind of thing came out of some bizarre, unique circumstance that may never happen again, and yet, you know, was that something that really required the development of a local ordinance or of a law? It's just...
You hadn't heard about the Tuesday evening alligator walks?
Yeah, that was quite the problem. That's, you know, that one. Apparently, there were thousands of alligators being walked at the same time, and, you know, it was dangerous. So,
Particularly when there's nobody left at the end of the leash.
Yeah. But I think that becomes an example of why, you know, you should not use an individual one-time event as the impetus for something that's going to be binding for all time.
Can ordinances have sunsets?
They can, or they
requiring
can
requiring a review periodically, so you don't get some of these goofy things that might have been applicable 110 years ago still on the books.
They can. There's a number of ways that can be accommodated, either a sunset or that it has to be revisited, or you know, that maybe there's a budgetary constraint that, you know, it has to be, you know, you have to budget for if there's some aspect of it that requires a workload that, you know, each year funding has to be allocated for it, and if the funding isn't allocated, the responsibilities go away, or there's ways that those things can be dealt with.
That's what the state ought to look at instead of shifting it down to the counties.
Well, you know, in general, the counties do ask that, you know, if there's a mandate, and even if the state does provide funding for that mandate, that if you stop providing funding, the mandate should go away. And in theory, that's law. But then again, there's all sorts of things that continue to be mandates for which we receive no funding.
Yeah, there's a little difference between application of the law and acceptance of the law, it seems.
Yeah.
At least in California.
And how much money do you want to spend fighting for something that theoretically is yours?
And you're not talking to the wrong guy about that. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Times, 342. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, commissions, committees, ordinances, all that stuff is kind of the wide end of the funnel. You guys being at the neck of the funnel and everything kind of coming to you as staff, as well as you as the decision-making authority. How do you get to the point where you ferret out what's legit, what isn't? Poundage, you mentioned about timing of ordinances, you know, rather than reacting in the heat of the moment, separating, giving a little time for reflection, and perhaps doing something that's a little bit more broad-based rather than very narrow in scope. How do you put all that stuff together, or is it just kind of the culture and it goes that way anyway?
Well, that's a very broad question, so I'll give you a very broad answer. You know, that gets to the basic tension that's set up by our system of government in the United States, that you know, there's a reason government moves slow in the United States, and that's because we haven't parked authority with any one entity, any one level of government. That within, you know, the federal, state, and local level, there is a balance of powers and shared authority, shared decision making. And that ensures that, you know, singular agendas can't ram through massive change at any given moment.
Does that also get in the way of being able to take care of something in a timely and prudent fashion?
Well, hopefully it ensures that dramatic change is going to be take place over enough of a period of time that it's not just considering the people involved in that change at that moment, but it's considering the overall, you know, dynamic of, you know, the population over time, and, you know, ensure that we're not going to be flailing wildly from one direction to another in the United States or at the local level, because, you know, even if you have a group that's being very vocal at any one time and creating the sense that there's a clear push to move in this direction, all you got to do is go one step too far in a given direction, and you'll start hearing from the other folks that have been silent until then. And so,
is that bad?
Well, if that's how you guide yourself, is you wait until you overstep this direction and then go back and overstep in the other direction,
or take one,
you're
going to
be
back,
veering wildly back and forth. And so, it's you know, there's value in a cautious approach to dramatic change. Now, obviously, at the level of wanting to, you know, just do more minor technical things, yeah, we don't want stuff to move slowly and whatever. We want stuff to be able to, you know, the regular day-to-day work of government should be able to move swiftly, should. But the real changes in direction should move slowly.
Okay, you guys got to play with the camping ordinance conceptually as an example for us to mm-hmm. talk about. Heightened event, mm-hmm. driving it. Certainly an area that hadn't had an awful lot of attention paid to it, because mm-hmm. the application of the loopholes, mm-hmm. nobody would have ever thought of. Okay. A lot of pressure, a lot of awareness in your face, literally for you guys. All these things came to fruition simultaneously. Okay, now you can deliberate for 10 years if you want to. Okay, you deliberate for 10 minutes if you want to. How do you find that balancing medium when you have these time factors at work simultaneously?
Well, the camping ordinance in front of the courthouse is a great example of, you know, a lot of what we're talking about. And as you said, it's something that it was kind of a first time, 150 years, that, you know, all of a sudden this came up. And we'd never had this situation before of a long-term encampment out there. And there are laws on the books, state, local, and federal laws that, you know, would affect certain activities out there.
Let me step back and we can maybe do a quick mm-hmm. parallel. The Garcia guys that were out at Clam Beach forever, or mm-hmm. the guys around on the mm-hmm. South Spit forever. Mm-hmm. Were those all camping ordinance issues that weren't able to be addressed timely because the ordinance just hadn't been really, didn't reflect those applications?
Well, so this raises the issue of, you know, there's laws on the books that address a lot of the activities. You know, you can't create a public nuisance, health and safety issues, all of these kinds of things that are already addressed. Is the ability to enforce those laws clear? And in this case, there was some uncertainty in terms of the county jurisdiction versus city jurisdiction. Ultimately, do those things require that we create a new law to deal with it, or just figure out the best way to enact existing laws?
Thanks for coming by. We've been talking to that head nod. I love the head nod response.
Yeah, oh, people couldn't see me nodding
my
head
go.
Affirmatively.
There you go.
That was nice.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone, yell, see you tomorrow.